Have you ever owned something that you really loved? Like one of these possessions that you could not live without, but then you came across someone who needed it way more than you do, and you just gave it away? Story that comes to mind for me, I used to have this mug with a fish on it, said Canada. Because growing up, I used to go fishing with my family at this lodge in Canada every summer. I got that mug there. It reminded me of the Northern Lights and giant pike and eating potatoes on some remote island. It was special to me. But one freezing day last year, I was driving in my car with fresh hot coffee in that mug, and there was a man at the corner shivering who just looked like so miserable, uncomfortable, cold. And in a moment of impulse, I rolled down my window, I just gave it to him, and then I drove off. I'm Jacob Lewis, and you're listening to Neighbors, a show about what connects us. Today's story is a little bit like me giving away that mug, but on a much bigger scale, about a woman who gives away something way harder to let go of, and just what happens when she does. And it starts in Katie Cooley's kitchen.
Okay, check your check. So first, just tell me what you had for breakfast.
For breakfast? Some yogurt and almonds.
I'm sitting with Katie at her dining room table. She eats these quick breakfasts because she has three sons, and she is always rushing around making sure they're at school, practice, and whatever at the right times. She's in her 30s, has a nice house, like it has a hot tub. She seems like a person who's very established as an adult and rooted here in Nashville. But when she first moved here, she didn't have much to lose.
Okay, so I was young, so I would have been like 22, and idealistic. And working at a church down in Brentwood.
She moved from Florida to Tennessee to be a youth pastor. She was trying to figure out her life. At that time, Katie says that she was a more passive person, just rolling with the punches, waiting for things to work themselves out. So when she got some bad news, it was surprising how she responded. Her brother's kidneys were failing. He was going to need a kidney transplant. And Katie, who'd always been the kind of person who did not volunteer for things but would wait to be asked, made a major exception to that rule.
Yeah, when I knew that he was sick, I was kind of like, well, I'll definitely be a candidate to be the donor.
No one had asked Katie. For some reason, she just went from passive to active and immediately told her brother she would give him her kidney. He was in the Navy and had just been diagnosed with a thing called IgA nephropathy.
His kidneys couldn't process like an immunoglobulin. I don't even know if I'm saying that right.
According to this YouTube pronunciation video,
immunoglobulin.
She's doing great. So basically, this meant that over time, her brother's kidneys were going to slowly lose the ability to filter out waste from his blood.
They would eventually just give out.
Now, volunteering her kidney says a lot about Katie. Like, she's a nice person, the kind that would give you a kidney. But when she said she would do it, it was kind of an abstraction. What I mean is this. She was in good health, young, didn't have anybody that really depended on her. And also, nobody really knew when her brother would need it. Because, for a while, it was manageable. He just needed to take some medicine and watch his diet. But maybe in a year, maybe a decade, he was going to need that kidney.
Hey, Jacob. Scott.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
This is Scott Uden. He's an engineer who lives in Portland, Oregon, and is Katie's older brother.
What would you say your relationship with her was like at when she was 22?
I would say, you know, we were not super close.
Yeah, yeah.
Very involved with her sorority sisters.
Yeah, and, well, yeah. So my brother and I love each other, and we've always loved each other. We've always gotten along great, but we're not like going to sit around and talk on the phone.
Oh, geez.
We come from a long line of German Midwestern farmers. So if that gives you an indication of the stoicism in our family, that's what it is.
On my dad's side, certainly. On my mom's side, I wouldn't call them stoic. They were sassy and down to earth at the same time.
We're all very loyal to each other. I know my brother would do anything for me.
Wouldn't you think he'd give you a kidney?
I think he would, if he could.
Still in her 20s, Katie started the process of putting down roots in Nashville. She met a musician and record producer named Kaysen. They fell in love.
When we were dating, I remember her telling me that one day she was going to give her kidney to her brother. So it's definitely something she decided to do a long time ago. And I thought it was going to be something that happened, you know, sooner than later. And, you know, through diet and just taking care of himself, you know, he was able to kind of prolong that for a while.
Scott, the engineer, carefully navigated his way through an entire decade with this disease. But after 10 years, he went on dialysis and urgently needed a new organ. In that span of time, Katie got married, bought a house, was surprised to find out she was pregnant with a son, then had two more sons. Compared to when she originally agreed to this, her life was in a very different place.
Well, I mean, it was chaos because my kids were 4, 3, and 1 at the time.
And if that wasn't enough, her community was also going through a tough time.
A bunch of our close couple friends all got divorced. So 2013 was just kind of this whirlwind year of like not sleeping because I had a newborn, and also because people were at our house all the time, like crying and going through emotional trauma. And then so the kidney surgery was always kind of just like, oh, yeah, that's kind of in the background.
But it didn't stay in the background for long. Katie was rising to the occasion. Scott needed a kidney. She said she would do it. So she found herself at Vanderbilt Hospital in Nashville getting tests done. There, she also talked to the doctors in Portland, the ones that would be doing the surgery. That's when they noticed something from one of the tests.
Usually they like to take your left kidney because it sits lower in your rib cage. But my left kidney had an extra artery attached to it, so they didn't want to cut two arteries. So they wanted to take my right kidney, which meant they had to do open surgery.
This would be much more invasive. Instead of a little cut and removing the kidney laparoscopically, they were going to have to make a foot-long incision and cut part of one of her ribs. It would be an arduous recovery.
How'd you feel about that?
Not great, but still, like, so I had gone through 3 childbirths in, you know, 3.5 years. And so I was like, well, I mean, I survived those, so I can survive this. And yeah.
After the break, Katie's surgery and the surprising outcome between her and her brother. So Katie just learned that the surgery was going to be a lot more than she bargained for, but she went ahead and scheduled it. It would be in February in Portland, and the time had come. Katie's in-laws came to Nashville to watch the kids. Katie and her husband got all packed and headed out a couple days early to have a little bit of a break before it got real.
So we flew out there and we go to the hospital and meet all these people and went to a hotel downtown just to, I wanted a weekend of kind of quiet, and we were going to eat some good food and just chill out. You know, if these were my last couple nights on earth, that's what I was going to do.
While they were there, a massive ice storm came through the city and shut most of it down.
And Portland, I guess, is kind of like Nashville. They're not really prepared for ice and snow. So a lot of people were like cross-country skiing through the downtown. And Kaysen and I just would like hike around and find open restaurants. And it was kind of magical, actually.
In the stillness of the ice storm, away from a friend's marriage is falling apart, away from the demands of 3 children... she had time to think, to process what she was about to do. And as you can imagine, it kind of hit her hard, especially the morning of the surgery. She went from seeing a magical landscape of ice to an ominous one.
I kind of thought that all the signs were leading to me, like I was probably going to die in this surgery.
You just had this sense?
Yeah, I just had this kind of like sense, and then everything I just felt like, emotionally, I was kind of trying to make myself okay with, you know, what if I don't survive? My brother seems normal. But like I said, he's just kind of stoic and even. That's when I was the worst. I was shaking really bad. And then they hooked me up to the IV where they started giving me drugs to calm me down. But I remember like violently shaking.
It would have made sense to back out feeling this way. In fact, the whole organ donor system is set up to give you an out, just to make sure you weren't coerced by someone to do this. She felt the weight of what would happen if she didn't make it. She had a husband and three little boys. This was a time of decision.
Up until that moment when I went under, they were like, you can get out of this at any point.
She says the surgeon said this to her.
I have five siblings, and I would do this surgery for maybe two of them. And he's like, it's a really hard surgery. I will make up an excuse if you want me to.
She hesitated. Her family, her life, her brother, all went through her head. She turned to the surgeon and told him she wanted to go through with it.
Yeah, so they cut me open.
Took the kidney out.
Put it in a little metal bowl.
And then my brother was in the operating room next to me. Just
sewed it inside of him.
And then as soon as they sewed it in, it started functioning. Like, it was like my kidney didn't even know it was in a different body.
That brand new healthy organ started filtering out toxins in Scott's blood. Like it was always this way. Even though it certainly hadn't been.
He had spent 10 years in deteriorating health. I think he felt good immediately, and I felt awful immediately. But I had gone from 10 years of, like, perfect health to trying to, you know, readjust to a new reality.
She couldn't really use her ab muscles because of the surgery. Sitting up was near impossible.
Because I just remember laying in bed, like, moaning. And I couldn't even, like, watch TV. I couldn't read. I couldn't listen to music. Like, nothing brought me comfort.
After an intense recovery in the hospital, she went back to Nashville. But it took her months to get back to normal, just to feel like her insides were in the right place. But her remaining kidney started picking up the slack, and she made a full recovery.
How did this change your relationship to your brother?
I have no idea, because I don't know if it did.
Well, let's just talk like data. Do you guys talk more now than you did before this?
No.
But are you guys closer?
No, I don't know. Maybe. I don't think so.
Scott says the same thing. Like, it changed the way he feels, but for all practical purposes, their relationship's the same. Still, she is in his thoughts a lot more.
You know, it's something I think about every day. Whereas before, I wouldn't necessarily think of Katie every single day, you know, getting out of bed and be like, you know, I still have to take meds and stuff like I did before. But like now I'm like, you know, it's incredible that, you know, I basically get an extension of life because of her. And then when it comes to holidays and stuff, I feel extra obligation to do something extra nice when I can.
Here's the real thing that surprised me the most. Yeah, her relationship to her brother didn't change. But her relationship to herself sure did. A lot. If you think about it, between having kids and this whole kidney thing, she went through a 5-year period where she gave life to others directly with her body.
I'm like amazed by my body, what it could do. Yeah. Just knowing that like my body can create and sustain life, and it has done that several times over, that's, I don't know, it's freeing to me. And then also then I think just the psychological benefit of doing something like that kind of is like this endorphin rush. Even when I think about it now, like I just kind of start feeling really good.
Feel like you went to the brink, or like you faced this fear, this kind of like looked death in the eye in a way by putting yourself at risk?
Yes, definitely.
In the prep for the surgery, somebody told Katie about an interesting study. The National Center for Biotechnology Information found that living kidney donors live 30% longer than non-kidney donors. That seems counterintuitive, right? You'd think all of the trauma of a kidney surgery, plus only having one kidney left, would shave off a few years. Now, one explanation might be that in order to be a donor, you need to be pretty healthy in the first place. But Katie has a different theory. That the radical generosity of giving of your own body and risking death, it changes you. It actually gives you some freedom.
when you feel free, you're not feeling stressed. You're not feeling anxious. And anxiety is kind of what shortens a lifespan, stress and anxiety, because that kind of makes you more susceptible to disease and deterioration of your mind and your body. And maybe it's not just chemical in my brain, but it's also like a spiritual, I think, I don't know, like a resurrection.
Katie is doing well and finds that compared to age 22, she's much less passive in her life. In fact, this renewed feeling after the surgery is what led her to start her own business.
Why not? Let's try this. What have we got to lose?
And her husband, Kaysen, says he also sees her differently. Like, there are new dimensions to her. She's created and is sustaining a lot of life in this world. And that just changes her. And as for her relationship with her brother, I was still curious about one final question.
At what point does it become his kidney?
Never. That'll always be my kidney. That's a piece of me walking around in Portland, Oregon.
Neighbors is from Nashville Public Radio and produced by me, Jacob Lewis, with production assistance from Caleb Shiver. Thanks, Caleb. The show's editors are Mac Linebaugh, Emily Siner, and Anita Bug. Music in this episode from Poddington Bear and the Blue Dot Sessions. If you like the show, take a few seconds today and leave a review in Apple Podcasts. I want to hear what you think, and it really helps others find the show. Neighbors is also a proud and founding member of The Herd. That's H-E-A-R-D. We're an audio collective of producers. We're awesome. You can find more out at theherdradio.com. I'm Jacob Lewis, and I'm reminding you to get to know your neighbors.